The title of the talk is how can the Buddha sit in the heart of our experience? And I said earlier in the retreat that the way of mindfulness and the way of the Buddhist teaching is in a sense quite radical, because it says that your freedom is in the center or the heart of your experience, or our experience. And that's really contrary to our intuition. Our intuition says the answer has to be somewhere else, because somewhere else is bound to be better than what I experience right now. How can you say, my back is hurting, I'm sitting here, I feel uncomfortable, I feel restless, and somewhere else is bound to be better? Another retreat, a better teacher, a better place, a better person, a better friend, a better life, a better, you know, it's very hard to really catch the sense that really in the center of the back pain is my liberation. That's just got to be something wrong with that. I can't finish the month. I don't have enough money. That's my experience of liberation. My partner's fighting with me every day. In the middle of those fights is my liberation. So it's something that's so difficult to understand. But if we look at these experiences, like my back is hurting, or I can't finish the month, not enough money. If we look at those experiences, there's something common about all those experiences of difficulty, struggle. And that is that we have a view of them. We have a kind of a distance from them. My back is hurting is actually a statement of that's closed. First of all, I. What does it mean, I? My back. Do I own it? Is it really mine? Can I tell my back to stop? No. So if I owned it, I could tell it to stop, but I can't. Hurting, what does that mean? Just hurting. Give me Akamol, fast. Hurting, what does that mean? What is I? What is back? What is hurting? If we look carefully at just that such a simple concept that we're using every day, which is automatic, it begins to open up, and it's not so clear. What is this I? Is it this I the same as this I 70 years ago? Are you the same I 10 years back? What is your back? Where does it stop? Where does it start? Why do you call it back? What is it? Made of cells, made of tissues, made of all kinds of things, made of energies, made of experiences, built from your genetics. But what is this thing back? What is this thing pain? I learned that something hurts. Is that it? End of the story? So there's a lot of ignorance that we don't know in these very simple experiences. Oh, this difficulty. Oh, struggle. Oh, it doesn't work for me. I have to go somewhere else. Oh, I need to get away from this. They're kind of closed boxes. And so we need to go back to a very simple-minded, almost like being the child. Actually, it's a bit like the story of the emperor's new clothes. Begadim shel begadim hamelech bigdei hamelech hachadashim. Okay. It's a bit like that we need to be a child looking again. Never mind, all our life we've been looking and seeing the emperor's not new clothes, because everybody sees the emperor's got clothes and everybody thinks the emperor's got clothes, and it needs us to be naked, simple, a child, to say, wait a minute, it's all a big illusion. The emperor's naked. Never mind what people say. We need to be, that is mindfulness. It's actually more than mindfulness, it's vipassana. Because mindfulness is more the way we look at things, and vipassana is what it is that we see, like this child that says, I don't agree to give in to the consensus, the muskamot. I want to look at things fresh, new, as they really are. Vipassana is the power to see clearly into things, to open the box. In the tradition it says, it's very simple. Someone gives you a sack of lentils. This is from the tradition. Okay. Someone gives you a sack of lentils. You take the lentils and you put them in the pot. Or you open the lentils, the sack, and you say, ah, green lentil, red lentil, brown lentil, I see. There is differences, there is colors, there is... Another example, my daughter, she's an artist. And it's amazing to watch a movie with her. So I'm there kind of like an innocent kid going, wow, look at this, and watching the movie and sort of enjoying the movie. And she says, look at the angle of the camera. Look at the way the director composed that shot. Look at the way how the director focused the camera on that and not on that. Look at the structure of the picture that he represent. Suddenly the whole thing opens up and I'm no longer just watching a movie. I'm watching a creative act. I'm looking inside. I'm opening the box and seeing it like it the first time. So we need to kind of get in there and just not just be with the movie, but really get in there and open. It works very deeply, this kind of seeing, vipassana. One of the most powerful places and experiences that you can imagine, and experiences of difficulty, would be death and dying. And I've had the privilege to work over the years with some people that are on the way to their dying. And those people who are dying and are ready to work with that journey, it's extremely powerful. There's something about the closeness of death and dying that says, no more bullshit. That's it. Cut the bullshit. It's existential. It's total. It's the end of the illusion. You no longer want to be those 100 people watching and believing in the emperor's close, you want to see what's really going on. So in the years I've had the privilege of working with some people who are on their way to dying, and it's been a beautiful shared journey. But in every case, what's been happening is an intense clarity about the journey, an intense inner work I can think of Ya'el Simcha that some of you know about. She would sit 3 hours every day in meditation in order to really understand the clarity of what is really happening with the journey of her body with cancer, and what is the changes, and how to be totally there with all the messages and all the life and with the death. And so this depth of seeing is totally changing everything. And that's vipassana. Mm-hmm. Seeing inside. Vipassana is seeing really the lentils, like between this and that. And passana is to see. No escape, like the people who were on their way to beyond. No escape. There's something here that at a certain point in your life, you don't have to think about death and dying for that. It's enough just to be alive and say, wait a minute, I'm not running away anymore. What is. This is my life right now. I'm not escaping from it and running anymore anywhere else that is going to be ke'ilu better. So what works, what creates the power of seeing inside, tovana, inside, into our experience, is steadily we build a kind of witness, edut, witness. Our mind gets trained to see into things that were closed, to see inside the box, not to be satisfied with a quick look at something, but to say, I'm there, I'm steady, I am watching, I want to know. Whenever you use power of mind to really look at something, it must reveal itself. It cannot be a closed box. Okay, maybe, you know, a while. Okay, not today, maybe tomorrow, maybe next week, or maybe next retreat. I don't know, or maybe in 5 minutes. But the power of mind, it takes to pieces. It takes things to pieces. It takes the hanachot, the assumptions that we have about life, like my back is hurting, is full of assumptions. Full of assumptions, hanachot. Full of non-thought-out assumptions. I, my back, my this, and hurt. Okay, go to doctor. Finished. End of story. And I'm busy. Leave me alone. It has to break all these. The power of mind breaks these construction. So I just want to say a few words about what it is inside an experience that does free us. How do we look at the back or at the me? How do we look at the pain that frees us? The inside, where is the Buddha sitting in and what is the Buddha saying? So the first aspect is when we look inside our experience, we see that there is discomfort. There is dukkha. Dukkha is non-satisfaction. It is happening. It is there. The back does hurt, and it isn't pleasant. We don't want to dress it up and throw a perfume into the shit. It is unpleasant, yes. If we look at our, oh, I can't finish the month, I've got no money. or I'm sick, or oh, something happened in my life. Yes, it's painful, it's all right. But this is to actually touch the pain and see that we can be with it and hold it in our hand, if you like. Instead of running away, instead of dressing it up, instead of throwing it on our partners or our children or our neighbors or our everybody else, we take responsibility for the experience and say, yes, this is an unpleasant experience. And part of that is, it's not just me. I don't have to carry all the difficulty of the world on me. Unpleasant experiences happen. It's not just me. They just happen. I didn't ask for them. So I don't have to take full responsibility for them. And I don't have to suffer extra. Not only I suffer, but I'm also the victim, a kurban, and I'm also, it's my fault that I'm suffering. So much of the, in the world, people blame the victim. Suffering happens. Shit happens. It's okay just to be aware that suffering exists, and we do suffer now and then from conditions that cause pain. So the first thing is not to run away from that and see in the heart of our experience there can be suffering, there can be difficulty. If we think about very clearly about emotions, we can be totally okay and happy, minding our own business, walking down the street, and someone says something to us that really presses our buttons. Boom. And we get angry. Or we open the newspaper and we read there all the disasters going on and we get anxious, frightened or worried. We didn't start it. We didn't invite the anger. We didn't want that to happen. We didn't control it. It's not in our hands. It came as conditions on us, and the result of that is reaction. And we reacted with emotion. And we can see that whole cycle of a condition happening and an emotion arising as a result, and the pain in there, we can see that whole cycle as dukkha, as pain, as a painful event that is controlling us, we're not controlling it. But it's okay to see conditions creating pain. We sit here, back is hurting. Okay, we're sitting, we're not moving, we're not dancing, we're not running away, and the back hurts. This is conditions. Even wanting certain experiences, there is dukkha in that. Wanting things to be something else. Wanting to be awakened now, and it's not happening. Wanting something other. Just think how much of our life, every day, we want something to be different from what it is. It's more or less the whole 24 hours. We work because we want to have more of this, or we want something to happen, or we want this something to be different. We want to change something. We want to be better. As Shakespeare said, better is the enemy of the good. So we don't want, it's not enough good. We need the better. Just think how much of our life is busy with wanting things to be better. But that's dukkha in there. There is a pressure. So we have to take that very seriously. It seems that dukkha is, okay, if my back is not hurting, I have no dukkha. But there is a subtle dukkha happening all the time, and it's good to know it. A second aspect that frees us is anicca. And anicca is changeability, that everything is passing by. Everything has a really short shelf life. Chaya Daf. Chaya Madaf. It's really short. Things don't stick. Even if we want them to, they won't stick. We can't get them to stick. There's this famous Zen story about a student went to the teacher and said, help me deal with my anger. And the teacher said, okay, bring your anger and we'll deal with it. So the student said, yeah, well that actually now I don't have anger at this moment. So the teacher said, well, so go back to your room and when you next have anger, bring it and we'll deal with it. So the student said, look, it takes me 10 minutes to go from my room to your room. And in this 10 minutes, my anger will certainly have disappeared. He said, you see, even if you want your anger, you can't have it. It comes and goes when it wants the anger. It's a very deep understanding that our experiences are built from conditions, and all the time conditions are changing, so our experience is changing. Our experience can never be fixed. It's always going to change because everything, the whole universe is changing, so our experience is also changing. The conditions for the anger will change after 5 minutes and the anger will go. The whole world has changed in 5 minutes. And all the conditions will make... Just think, you'd be sitting here stuck like hell with some loop in the mind that's giving trouble and going around and around and around, and then the bell rings. Total condition changed, everything changed. This drum, huge drama that is occupying the whole mind is just gone, boom. Disappeared. Why? Because lunch. So this understanding of the changing conditions, meaning that our experience is constantly changing, is another place that frees us in the heart of our experience. Think of a pain. If we look at a pain in the back, say, and we begin to really look into it, it is alive. It is all the time different. It is sharp, it is blunt, it is moving, it is up, it is down, it is disappearing and it's coming again. And we move tiny millimeter of our body and it's gone. And we move tiny millimeter of our body in another direction, it comes back. And it's a dance. This pain in the back is a dance. We can't give it a language, we don't know what its name is, we don't know... It's not a thing. It's like a river that's flowing all the time. And so is everything that we experience. And this really frees us. Nothing is stuck. There is no box. It's all a dance. It's all a dance. And every minute we're dancing. In every thought is a dance, and every feeling is a dance, is like music, it's moving, it's playing. So that really frees us. We can think of the most problematic psychological issue that we have in our life, and if we really look at it, it pops up, it disappears. When someone says something, up it comes again, and when there's lunch, it disappears again, and it is not a thing. And if we understand that deeply, we're free of it. Can be the biggest. We don't need 5 years of psychoanalysis. We just see this thing is made of air. This big issue. And the third aspect that frees us within the heart of experience is anatta, the sense that it's happening, but there's really no owner of these experiences. Experience doesn't have an owner. We feel it's us. But if we look at that, there really isn't an owner of experience. Like, this is really my experience. Can I take it with me? Can it, can I sell it in the market? Is it really mine? Is anything really mine? We have my car until we give it to somebody else or it crashes. We have my body until it gets old and we think, oh, I don't want this body anymore. We my money, but it's just zeros in the bank. Who does it belong to? It just passes between people. My money? Anything. It's like water. My thoughts, they're like water. They pass by. We aren't in control of them. They're in control of us. We can't decide what to think. The thoughts decide us. Or the thoughts do themselves. We can't say, I want to think like this, and in 1 minute I'm going to think this, and then I'm going to think that, and then I'm going to think that. And that. No, the thoughts are a crazy cacophonia that do their own thing. So that's the third aspect. And these three aspects are called the three characteristics, or the three, in the Tibetan tradition, three seals. Seal is a chotam, right? Chotemet. And they are really in the heart of experience what frees us. And if we look under, we will see them all the time. So I want to get a little practical and say, okay, we're starting with the body. And in the main text, which in a way stands behind the whole mindfulness movement, which is big time today in the world, but the main text that stands behind it is Satipatthana Sutta, the text, the four foundations of mindfulness. And they're just basically four territories in the human being in which we apply mindfulness. And there doesn't need to be four, it's just a sort of a way of understanding, a way of looking at it. But the text divides it into four. And the first is the body. The first is the body. And the Buddha said, let go of worry and concern about your life, at least a bit, to some extent, it says in the text. Just a little bit, because otherwise we can't even start. We can't go on a retreat if we're so full of activity and busyness and worry and concern, we don't have time for a retreat. So let go a little bit the worry about life. Basically, what we do here is we give our mobile phones to the manager. That's called, as the Satipatthana Sutta, let go a bit. And we look at the body. And as we look at the body steadily, hour after hour, sitting, walking, eating, breathing, we begin to let go of or see through our projections on the body. For example, it's got to be a nice body, it's got to be a better body, it's got to do this, it's got to do that, why my body is hurting, it's betraying me, bogedbi, etc. Labels on the body, my body's like this, my body's like that. Gradually, we are doing this. We are getting close to the body. What is really the experience of bodily life? If we look at a painful area in the body, we see it's alive. So we're already doing that, in a sense, opening the box. It's not just, my back is hurting. I think everyone is doing this and is able to do this. It's not just my back is hurting, it's a problem. It's, yeah, I've got a relationship with it. And what is going on? I am looking at it. We're listening. So we've already moved a little bit towards vipassana by not stopping with just very instant labels and this, I've got a problem, I take Akamol. We're not doing that here. We're sitting. Even though it's a bit sort of painful sometimes, but we're sitting watching. What is the body saying? We're not riding it like a donkey. In the Jewish sort of text, the body is called chamor, chomer, because we ride the body, it's like a donkey. But we're listening to what the donkey's saying. There's a little story from Nasruddin that one day a neighbor came to Nasruddin and said, you stole my donkey. And Nasruddin said, no, I didn't. And at that moment, the donkey made his sound from the next room. And the neighbor said, you see, the donkey's there. I just heard him. And Nasruddin said, do you want to believe me or you want to believe the donkey? We're listening to the donkey, not just me. We're listening to what this body is telling us. The body is the world. The body is a window. In the Satipatthana Sutta it says, we watch the body inside and outside. What that means is, we're not a closed box. The body is sensitive and receiving all the time, is in communication. The senses are open. We hear the birds. We touch the ground. We feel the wind. We listen to the sounds. We feel each other. We are under the sky. So the body is in relationship, inside and outside. Think of gravity. The box would be, okay, I have to walk. I can't jump higher than this. I have a weight. I look on the scales. Okay, and I weigh very little. I look on the scales and think, my God, do I exist? I weigh 53.5 kilos. That's really small. So I think maybe I'll fly away. But, okay, what's the experience of weight? So we did it now in walking. Pressure. What's happening to the body with weight? But what is this weight? Hamishkal. What is it? It's koach meshicha. It's pulling us. We are being pulled. What's this koach meshicha? Gravitatia. It's from the universe. It's not ours. We experience the universe through simply the pressure of the feet on the ground. I know this might sound abstract, but it's not abstract. Every time we look at something, we're actually seeing the universe. Every time we look at something simple, the weight of the body, the sounds of the birds, we're actually opening to the world. So it's inside and outside. If we keep that attitude of checking what really we experience in the body, we will experience all the three characteristics that I talked about. We'll experience difficulty, but we'll experience change and aliveness and movement and vitality and nothing fixed, and we'll experience no self, even in the body. It will be unnecessary to think, my breath. It just won't happen. We won't need to have ownership. My breath. We won't need. It's just not necessary anymore. That's insight. I once met a monk from Cambodia who was 101 when I met him in America. And I asked him, what's your practice every morning? How do you practice? He said, I go through the body part by part, and every part that I look at, I ask, how are you? Right ear, how are you? Oh, very good. Left ear, how are you? Very good. Right eye, how are you? Very good. And every part of the body he went through, communicating, listening, touching. There's nothing self in that. It's opening the whole thing into another relationship, also a beneficial relationship, a relationship that is helpful to us, bringing us okayness, bringing us a feeling of goodness. And that's an agenda that we have here. We're not adding to our suffering. The second foundation is liking and disliking. And we didn't really go into that too much yet, but it is there as behind what we're doing, and we've mentioned it a few times, and it's so much part of our experience that we really need to know this is the nature of things. Liking, not liking, pleasant, unpleasant. It's doesn't feel good, feels good. If we are bigger than like and not like, if we can allow things to be pleasant, unpleasant, there's a freedom in that, but not to ignore it. So the second foundation is actually knowing what it is that pulling, pushing. Someone once said, did the Buddha like and not like things? And the answer, some text said, oh yes, the Buddha also shivered and sweated. Shivered meaning cold. To be cold, and sweat means to be hot. In other words, the Buddha also was cold and hot like every human being, but didn't make a story out of it. No, didn't need to build anything out of it. The third foundation of mindfulness is citta, citta upasana, meaning working with the mind and the heart. It's the thoughts that grow out of, if you think of something that you like or don't like, the way it's built into an emotion needs feeling, it needs thought, it needs memory. So the building, the constructions that we make in the mind and the heart are citta, function of mind and heart, and that's, we can say, thought perception. Usually we look at our mind in the retreat and say, it's a huge mess. It's just a big mess. Like I said, cacophony. All the time, blah, 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 blah. Big noise. Not music, but a big noise giving me lots of trouble. We also think, okay, the mind is great. With the mind, I can look at stars. The mind, I can read books. The mind, I can listen to a Dhamma talk. The mind, yeah, it's really... But if we look carefully at the mind, and a tool we look at the mind with is the mind. We don't have any other non-mind to look at the mind. So we're looking at the mind with the mind. But we begin to see that the mind too has these three characteristics. Full of thought, dukkha. All passing and moving and stream of thought that doesn't really go anywhere, that just disappears and arises and disappears all the time, anicca. Thought, is it mine? Not exactly. Do I own my thought? Well, we think we do, but can you control your thought? And does every thought have a label on it, mine? If we think about, a cup of coffee, it's mine already? It's just the thought of a cup of coffee. So we see those three characteristics inside thought. And again, it's a place of freedom. Slowly, we see thought becomes less powerful because we see it's not made of anything. We see it's empty. Thought is arising, coming, going. It feels very strong and powerful and controlling totally. But that's the box. If we open the box, it begins to get a little weaker. I'm just a little thought. I'm not a great monster. I'm just a little thought passing by. Okay. The mind is like a mirror. The mind is nothing really. It's just a mirror of what's going on and what's coming into it. That's all it is. So when we are thinking, we are just mirroring what's happening in the world. And so we can't say it's mine, it's the world. Every thought we have comes from somewhere else. We take it in, we build it, we make story, we make this, we make that, but it's all coming from somewhere else. The mind is a mirror of the world. Every word we learnt is coming from the zero age. Everything we read is come in there. Everything we know is come in there. It's all filling the hard disk up here. Its hard disk is full of stuff from somewhere else. So just, to be aware of that is helpful. It means we can be lighter with our own thoughts. Our mind is a mirror. The fourth foundation is Dhamma. And mindfulness of Dhamma, mindfulness of the truth of things. Mindfulness of going deeper into who I am, what are the qualities that are guiding my life? Mindfulness of energy and tiredness. Some of you experiencing tiredness here. Mindfulness of awareness of love. Awareness of emotion. Awareness of clarity, the power of investigation, inquiry that we're doing, chakira, the quality of chakira. This is not, the fourth foundation is not beyond in some great sort of realm of just the Buddhas. In the questions that you're asking today, after one day here in the retreat, many of you are asking questions that are reflective. What is the quality that what is the quality of this? Let me understand my tiredness. What is it? How do I work with it? How do I understand it? Reflection, inquiry. These are already the fourth foundation. The way we look at ourselves, the way we understand ourselves, the way we look at our qualities of love, of interest, of generosity, of big heart, the way we understand our difficulties. So the whole area of understanding is the fourth foundation. We are practicing all of those four foundations all the time, but in different doses. Minunim. So major one is the body right now. But all of those are there. We can't not have some relationship to thought, some relationship to tovli rali, vedana, some relationship to our clarity and our wisdom, what's really going on, how can I see things differently? We are in all of the four, but the dominant place is the body because it's easiest to settle down, to quieten down. So, what is the fruit? How do we recognize if in the heart of experience we free up things? How do we recognize it? How do we know when things are freer for us? Well, one place that we can recognize is we just simply get lighter with ourselves and with the world. Things feel less heavy. They don't stick. There's this famous quote from Chesterton who said, "Why do angels fly? Because they take themselves so lightly." So we can take ourselves more lightly because in the heart of experience we know that things are not so personal and not so heavy and not so stuck and moving and alive. The more we experience aliveness, the more we dance with the life. When we dance with the life, we do not take things so heavy on us, and that's a sign that we are benefiting from the practice. We're going to the heart of experience. And actions in life come out of that bigness of spirit, that freedom, that lightness. Many people think, how do I act in life from mindfulness, from meditation? It's okay to sit here for hours and hours and hours and hours, but does it mean that when I go out in the street, I can't do anything unless I sit for hours and hours and hours in the street, in the high street? I have to sit for an hour or two in the Canyon Merkaz Dizengoff before I buy something, or before I go on a bus, or before I talk to somebody, I need 3 hours of meditation. It's not like that. As we get lighter, and as we dance with our inner world, we can dance more easily with the outer world. Our actions get lighter. We can understand more deeply how to give something, how to say something right, how to say something that's fitting to the situation. Because we're less heavy with our own stuff and less in the box, stuck in the boxes. So it affects the way we are in the world. And our actions get lighter, more freer, more connected. So there's more of a dance with what happens. We allow things to arise and we respond more freely. And finally, as we practice in the heart of experience, something happens to our consciousness, which is that our consciousness itself begins to kind of take wings. The awareness itself just gets bigger. Because if we put everything in boxes all the time, our mind, our consciousness, sort of goes into the box. And we see things in boxes, and we see things minimal. This hurt, this good, this I need to do, this not, this yes, and so on. Must come out, da, 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 da. But as soon as we open experience, our consciousness itself begins to be opened. Intuition grows, awareness grows, presence grows. We become bigger people. And it is happening through meditation. Consciousness, it's like we become more aware of the white paper, not just of the text that's written on it. So we become aware of space and live in this bigger space. Okay, so that's all for this evening, and let's just take a couple of minutes of quiet. guy. Can you take this? I pick it, I press something, so I don't know. You have to sort of check.